The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Settles in your soul. Yes, it does. Good morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa broadcasting live from downtown Reading. At KCNR Studios, your talk radio.
Happy New Year, man.
I was going to get there, man.
Oh, well, yeah. Sorry. Go right
nothing
ahead.
Like having
how's
a,
it going? Good morning.
Like having a mouthy producer, you know?
Okay, I'm signing off.
No, go ahead, brother.
Just saying Happy New Year. That's
thank
all.
You, Alex. Happy New Year to you, too. So we're broadcasting live down here. My co-hosts, we're waiting on Wynn Carpenter, and the way the traffic is and the way the weather is, you might be having a tough time out there. Janet's on assignment. We're broadcasting live, as I said, from KCNR Studios, 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, and 1460 AM. We are your talk radio. We are also streaming live at KCNR1460.com, KCNR1460.com, and we archive forever and ever. And lo and behold, I see someone coming through the door. It looks like a wind sighting. I've got Patrick Jones here and Lori Jones. How are you two doing?
Great, Terry.
Good.
Thanks for having us this morning.
Sure. Hi.
Good morning.
Yeah. It's, weather and this time of year, I mean, I think, you know, I think a lot of us have been a little bit under the weather, but I think it's just that kind of time of year. Anyway, Happy New Year, everybody. Mark Baird had a great thing happen. We probably won't get into that much. He is actually on an airplane right now.
Surprise, surprise.
What's that?
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. And he'll be coming here next Sunday on the 11th. He might call in, as most people probably already heard. He won a very important Second Amendment court case, which is the constitutional carry of a loaded weapon in the state of California. So we're going to have more of that as we go. But we're here with Patrick and Lori, and Patrick has some very interesting stuff to tell us today. So, Patrick, what's on your mind, buddy?
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having me, Terry and Wynn. Good morning.
Good morning.
So it's been out there for a while now about the suit that I have brought forward against Stephanie Bridget, which is Shasta County's district attorney. And so this thing really starts that you have to go back in time to 2022 into the general or to, excuse me, into the primary election in that year in 2022. And that particular election was the most heated election that we've seen in Shasta County for quite some time. We had six contested races with six established candidates and six non-established candidates. And what was unusual about that race is that it had a record turnout in a primary without having a president on or anything like that, and very unusual to see a record turnout in a primary. And I'm going to talk about that in a couple months from now as to why I believe that happened and some things that happened on Market Street out of our elections department. But that's a separate issue. Today, what we're talking about is what occurred in that six-month period, roughly from January to June, in the DA's office. And a lot of us saw it firsthand, as I did, and there are a lot of other people out there that saw Stephanie Bridget and her staff campaigning on county time. And, you know, the Board of Supervisors provides her with a budget. It's often around $12 million budget. And so by using her staff to campaign, you know, is a theft of public funds. It's illegal in a multitude of ways. And we all saw it. A lot of us saw it. I saw it. In that office, a whistleblower came forward to the county and filed a complaint with support services director. At the time, I think it was Shelley Forbes, and stated that 80 to 90% of her time was campaigning on county time. And so the county is required by law under the California Whistleblower Protection Act to do a thorough, timely investigation. Well, the county did do a timely investigation, but what they didn't do was a thorough investigation. They did a very, very sloppy, minimal investigation. For example, they only interviewed 5 people. They should have interviewed at least 100.
Mm-hmm.
There was at least that many people that saw various things, and there's 75 people in the office. And so
that's in the DA's office.
In the DA's office. And so there was this internal investigation, and then they basically kind of wrapped it up. Now, if we fast forward a little bit to early, it was probably about mid-2023, I'm chairman of the board of the Shasta County Board of Supervisors. We have a brand new CEO, Dave Rickert. He caught me in the hallway and said, hey, that investigation on the DA is wrapping up. And I said, Dave, I don't know about any investigation.
Wow.
And he goes, well, go take a look at, you know, talk to Monica over at Support Services. So I did. So I talked to Monica Fugit, and she said, yeah, the investigation on the DA is wrapping up. And I said, well, how come I don't know about it? She goes, because we don't tell you about them. And I said, one's about the DA? And she goes, no, all investigations. We don't tell the board about any investigation. So a big problem there in that. This thing was going to be covered up, and Dave Rickert, our CEO, he assumed that I would know, but he didn't know that the board's never been privy to any of the investigations, which means there's been some wrongdoing in the past, without question, that these things would simply, because the county is going to try to minimize liability, so they're going to do an investigation, which is required by law.
Let me ask you a question, just for clarity. Okay, when they do an investigation, does that involve any kind of legality? I mean, if you're investigating somebody, who does the investigation, and what's their jurisdiction in that?
Yeah, so the county has, if you take a look at the agendas, in fact, there was just a couple months ago, they hired a new investigator out of the Bay Area. In fact, I talked to Chair Cry at the time and said, I really dislike this investigator. Take a look at their website. Mm-hmm. This is another woke company that mm-hmm. is clearly not going to do thorough investigations, but they are licensed to practice investigation services in the state of California. And so they hire particular investigators to deliver the county what the county wants, which is limited liability. They want to put that down. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, but you can't cover up fraud. When it's there, you have to bite it and say, you know what, we gotta own this. You know, and so that's, but you see a trend with the investigators that they have.
Well, what about, okay, doesn't the board approve the funding for the investigations?
Yeah,
we do. Awesome. Yeah, and there was one just a couple months ago where.
So then how did you, as sitting on the board, as being the chair, approve any funding for investigations that you knew nothing about?
And how does that ever work if that's been the policy of the past?
Great.
Well, so it goes to another problem, right? I mean, we have a variety of different problems here. So yeah, those contracts keep coming up over and over. For this particular one, it was John Beers, and he's again out of Bay Area somewhere. And he was county counsel or a city attorney for a city or a county somewhere in the Bay Area. He had just recently retired, became an investigator, and obviously his job is to minimize liabilities for whomever that he's going to be working with. And however, in this investigation, even though it was a very quick, not thorough investigation, in the investigation, and that investigation is made public, so you can go to Shasta County and get that. It is redacted, so you're gonna, the names of the individuals
right.
are going to be redacted, but it's about 47 pages, and in there you're going to find a couple remarkable things, even as limited as it was. First, Stephanie Bridget says...
Well, I wanted to ask you, I just trying to clarify the stuff you've already said a little bit. In the fact that you said that you've been mentioning the word fraud, and I remember that we kept hearing from people like Jovan Pulitzer, that fraud can only be used in a term in a federal crime. So, you know, is this, it sounds to me like, did anything go off to the Attorney General of the state of California? And was there any investigation that the Attorney General looked at, whether it be a good investigation or a bad investigation? Did the Attorney General get privy to this? And I'll end it with this, because according to the California Constitution, the Attorney General of the United States, Article 5, Section 13, has jurisdiction over any kind of case. He can take a case away from the DA. He can get into an investigation. It was amended in November 5th, 1974. So in that vernacular, did anything go up to the Attorney General? And was it this investigation light that was done by the county? Go ahead.
So nothing went to the U.S. Attorney General?
No, the Attorney General of the state of California.
Yeah, so it did, and they declined. Yeah, and so they declined to look at the matter. So yes, it did go to the AG's office, and they simply declined to take a look at it, which, okay. You know, and to be honest here.
So they never rendered any kind of opinion. They just said, no, we're not going to look at it.
Correct. And it's okay. Very common. Almost every time we've asked them to take a look at something in depth, they don't do it.
Sure.
And so it's a bit of a waste of time. In fact, I don't even like contacting them because I already know the answer that I'm going to get. And so the county is required to do a proper, thorough investigation. That didn't happen with John Beers. But what did come out of that quick investigation, two striking things. First, when they asked Stephanie, did you campaign on county time? Her response was, yeah. And so she has admitted to the theft of public funds. Second, at the end, his conclusion was, by a preponderance of the evidence, that Stephanie Bridget and her subordinates campaigned on county time with and using county equipment. Allegation sustained, meaning it's honest. He also sustained that the whistleblower was credible. And so he has sustained several things. Now it's up to a court to determine the depth of the misuse of public funds
federal,
and the theft.
Federal court?
Because no, this is Shasta County Superior Court.
Go ahead.
So the case has been filed. In fact, for Tuesday of this week, it's on closed session most likely. I can't be 100% sure because it just says potential litigation, but I'm pretty sure they will be discussing this case in closed session.
The BOS.
The Shasta County Board of Supervisors.
Okay.
And I had come to the board 6 months ago and let them know that I had filed a complaint and because she has admitted to this misuse of public funds, the county should not defend her because it's not within her scope of work. And, for example, when we have an officer-involved shooting, we certainly defend that officer and will vigorously defend that action. If we had a sheriff deputy selling marijuana out of the back of his squad car, we do not defend that. That is not within the scope of his work. And that's the same thing here. She has admitted to the misuse of public funds, campaigning on county time. So because she has admitted to that, you don't spend taxpayers' money to defend her illegal actions. The board voted 4-1 to do just that.
She already spent taxpayers' dollars doing that by running her campaign with the subordinates in her office. Hello?
Well, the other thing, too, is that, you know, there was a case.
So it's a double dip right there, then.
Well, there's a case with the supervisor, Patty Nolan, at Tehama County, where
correct.
She basically got ended up resigning.
Right. Yeah. She was accused of drinking on the job, among other things, and those things are obviously not in the scope of work. The county did not defend her.
Right.
And she had to hire her own attorney. They just recently settled, and that's what should have happened here.
Well, I was told the county had to reimburse her.
Well, that was part of the settlement.
Okay, so the settlement was she quit.
Right. And they would
pay
her
attorney
fees.
And then they reimbursed her for her
attorney fees?
Correct.
Why would they? I mean, to me, I don't know how they – anyway, I think that's probably or could be one of the things that's bothering the county is that they could be saying, hey, you know, we don't want to have to pay a lawyer $1,000 an hour mm-hmm. when we could pay our lawyer for $300 an hour.
Well, no, so the county has hired outside counsel. So as this thing moves to the trial –
okay, for this particular situation.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And so as this thing moves to trial because it's going to be a jury, you know, a jury trial.
Sure.
As these steps move along the way, the cost to the taxpayers could easily be $1 million of outside county counsel. This thing's not going to take, you know, 6 months to finish all the interview processes and the subpoenas. It's going to be pretty complex, but we will show exactly what happened. Now, to make matters a little more complicated, after I read the whistleblower, the whistleblower made the complaint, whistleblower number one, and I was able to read that unredacted. I had mentioned that I saw the same thing.
Because you were the chair of the board at the time.
I was chair of the board at the time, but right. I was watching what was occurring in 2022, and I watched her staff campaign on county time. And so they said, well, you should file a complaint. So I did. And so I became whistleblower number two, and an investigation, a thorough investigation, timely, should have occurred. And this was in 2023. Mm-hmm. And so we had new county council at that time. During this time, Ruben Cruz had just resigned, which is our county council. Then our next county council, Jim Ross, he resigned. Matt McCumber was the next county council. He resigned, and one other resigned. So we had half of the staff all resign at this exact time. Hmm. And then we got Joe Larmer, who's the current county council, and he was to engage an investigating firm, which we already had some on contingent, or hire a more thorough firm, which is what I wanted. And I wanted somebody really unconnected. I didn't want anybody out of Sacramento. I didn't want anybody that we're going to use over and over, because they often give you what you want instead of a real thorough investigation.
So was he given directive by the board to do that at that time?
Well, he has to do it.
But was he given directive by the board to do that?
Well, the board wouldn't know. The board, it was not.
At that time, you didn't know all?
No. I mean, it wasn't agendized. It wasn't, you know.
They didn't give him direction.
You know, so, I mean, it's you have a complaint. So we have a process when a complaint is made through support services director, and it's credible, then an investigation under California Whistleblower Protection Act must
That's part of his job, and he knows that, and he should have acted on it.
Correct.
And okay. Whether the board said to do it or not.
Well, right. He has to do that, and then the board should be informed
of the action.
Of that, right, which that wasn't happening either. So I had asked about it. They agreed to do the investigation. Mm. You know, weeks went by, and I asked, you know, how's it going, and I got excuses. I asked again and again and again and again. I even found an investigator that was recommended to me, presented that to the county, and they stalled on that, and I must have talked with that investigator 10 times, and they kept stalling him and stalling him. And so through the remainder of 2023 and the entire year of 2024, they did not do an investigation, and they stalled. And the reason why was because they now, county council, now knew the depth of the problem. They understood how much damage was done, how many cases, because she was campaigning.
It was something like 50%, wasn't it?
It was a high percent. Mm-hmm. And it could be as many as 800 cases dismissed during this time. She's clearly not getting her work done. Now, that presents major liability to the county. So they're going to stall and stall. Now, why were they stalling? Obviously, to get it past the statute of limitations.
Right.
And so even when I was out of office in 2025, I continued to call the chair and County Council Larmer to get them to act, and they still would not do it. And so,
Two and a half years at least, they didn't do
it. Right, and I must have mentioned and talked and argued about this issue at least a dozen times, probably more, but it was a lot of conversations over a lot of time period, and they clearly did not want to get to the truth.
There was many of us at the board, and I know Wink can agree with this. We went to board meetings. We saw gobs of people from the DA's office that were dressed in their work clothes, mm-hmm. their little suits and everything, and they were in there, just dozens of them, all the time. So, I mean, we were questioning back then, I asked a couple of them, how come you guys aren't at work? Right. You know, I mean, it's Tuesday. Well, it's my day off, or it's my lunch hour. Well, it's 10 in the morning.
Yeah. And you know, in fact, you, in open session, in the public comment, you made that statement, Terry.
I did.
And, questioning why are all these people from the DA's office
here?
It's during business hours.
Yeah.
They should be getting some work done.
Right.
Instead, they're sitting over here for 4 or 5 hours waiting for public comment.
Every meeting.
Right. Especially since they're so far behind.
And so the harm it did, and you know, what also Stephanie Bridget did is by doing this and pushing her employees to do this, it those were all illegal acts from those employees. She put them in a very bad position just so she could get reelected. And the whistleblower came forward saying that what she said was that Stephanie said, you know, we're behind. We're going to lose this race. This was probably around March of 2022. And that if we don't win this thing, we're all going to lose our jobs, which it really isn't true. Some people would resign.
Like they always do when there's a regime change.
I mean, when Stephanie came in, 17 people resigned, right? They wouldn't work with her. That kind of statement, she was clearly frustrated. She got nervous. She got desperate. And so she used her staff, putting them all at risk. But more importantly, what she did, the harm that she did, was by not doing her work, all those cases and all those families, all those victims didn't get justice during that time. And that's the part that really bothered me, was that in the legal community in downtown Reading, attorney after attorney after attorney can tell you about the problems in and around that time.
Well, that was justice delayed, justice denied in a colossal way. That's huge.
Yep.
Right. And they were trying to be discreet because they don't want to take on the DA. The DA is very powerful and can hurt them in a variety of different things, legal things that they do.
And they don't want a legal battle for that.
Right. And some of them could lose their jobs. I mean, this is it's kind of a nasty business in some ways. A lot of attorneys in the legal community were highly aware of what was happening. Nobody wanted to take this on. The county should have done it, but they started to get nervous themselves because they saw the extent of how deep this would go. Mm-hmm. and the damage that
what does
it caused.
That mean?
Well, so several of the Board of Supervisors, in fact, two supervisors particularly that ran in that 2022 primary, they had a front row seat to see everything just like I did. So there are at least two supervisors, sitting supervisors, that know exactly what Stephanie Bridget did.
Mm-hmm.
They lived it. They too should have filed a complaint based off of what they saw too. Now they have chosen not to do that, and that's fine. But that doesn't alleviate me from not doing my duty of describing what I saw, and a great loss to the taxpayers and to victims and families that didn't get justice during that time. And so my attempt here is to hold her accountable. My goal here is that she needs to resign. She needs to step down for what she did. She says that my allegations have no merit. That is the exact content of what she has said publicly. And I think if you read the first whistleblower report, even as poorly as it was done, she one admits to the crime of campaigning on county time. And even in that investigation and even in that whistleblower report, you're going to see 29 emails from her during county time.
From who?
From Stephanie Bridget.
To
campaigning, looking at...
to the subordinates.
To all kinds of different people, checking on campaign receipts and you know, campaigning activity.
All done during work hours.
Okay, right. I got a couple questions off of what you just said. One is, the idea is to get her to resign. Does she still get her retirement if she resigns, number one? Number two... who replaces her, and what's the process of that? Does somebody get selected to be put in her position? And the third thing is how much time does she actually have left before she's reelected? Go ahead.
Yeah, so all those questions are good questions. So first, if you're convicted, you do not get retirement for the time period that you did harm. So her retirement would still be there, but not to the full extent, right?
So for 1 year, it's out.
For that time period that the fraud and the theft of misuse of public funds occurred, that could be taken away. So she'll still get her retirement, in other words. That's just how it works. That's
okay.
My understanding.
Okay.
And what was the second question, Terry?
The other one was who takes over when she resigns, and how much time would there be left? How much time does she have left before she goes into reelection? I know her and the sheriff got an extra 2 years. So
the DA and the sheriff got the extra 2 years.
2028?
Correct. And so the Board of Supervisors in the charter, so when there is a actually right now, so when there is a resignation, the Board of Supervisors have a couple options. Typically, they would appoint,
okay,
and then that person would want run in the
Could
upcoming.
They put forth a special election? Is that within their jurisdiction to do that?
Yeah, I'm not 100% positive what the board would choose
to
do.
I'd like to know about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Normally, they would appoint. We saw okay. when there were votes of no confidence on Sheriff McGreeny.
Mm-hmm.
He stepped down. The board appointed
Sheriff Johnson.
Appointed Sheriff Johnson. So they could do the very same thing. Mm-hmm. What I'd asked at that time is, because we were within 6 months or so of an election, is just let it go to an election mm-hmm. so that we're not having the cost of a special election. The board chose not to do that. They appointed, and then he had to rerun 6 months, you know, had to run for that position. I think for the board.
You're talking about McGreeny? Is that who you were talking
Johnson.
About?
Johnson.
Johnson, okay.
So, when Johnson came forward.
Gotcha, okay.
The board chose to appoint him.
Sheriff Johnson.
And
yeah.
My point for not wanting to appoint is they had appointed Eric McGreeny and it didn't turn out so well.
Right.
So, you know, let's not appoint again on the position of sheriff. Let it go to now. If the election was 3 years out, I would say, yeah, appoint. But it wasn't. It was just around the corner. So that was a mistake by the board to appoint him.
Now, we're going to have to go off to our break, but when we get back, I've got some questions people had texted me on that I want to ask you. But this is pretty eye-opening. I mean, you know, at what point, what's the price of getting of redoing a wrongdoing and fixing a problem? I mean, it seems like it's all about, well, we save money here, we don't save money there. I'm kind of talking about the county here, but anyway, I digress. So time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
It's been too hard to live it, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there.
The property insurance crisis in California is starting to affect the business insurance property also. 200 to 300% rate increases in business property rates or not writing business insurance at all are becoming the norm. At Siskiyou Insurance, we have over 100 years experience in writing business insurance in the North State. We can help. We live here and care about our community and want to make sure that you keep your business with a local agent that knows our town and supports it every day. And we'll get you the best deal we can. Call Curtis Byron at Siskiyou Insurance Services, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345. Siskiyou Insurance, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345.
Hi, I'm Steve Coburn, proud owner of Country Air Pet Resort here in Redding. I invite you to come and take a tour of my revitalized pet resort. Our goal here at Country Air is to make sure your pet can relax and have a healthy, happy time away from home. With friendly, caring people, lots of fresh air and exercise, good healthy food, and plenty of pampering. There are no small cages here. What we offer are large temperature-controlled runs and spacious exercise yards that are great for fun and socialization. We even offer daycare. Cats are treated to a two-room apartment plus playtime in our playroom. So stop by and take a tour of the best. You and your pet will want to come back to Country Air Pet Resort, where our motto is, we treat your pets as if they were our own. Country Air Pet Resort, 549-3335.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Alan Gordon, Coach Master Collision. She had minor damage to her rear bumper. I wrote her an estimate. Later, I received a call. The lady responsible for the damage wanted to pay for the repairs out of pocket. Her insurance agent told her a claim would raise her rates for years. With our experience in the claim process, I explained to her most insurance companies would forgive a claim if the cost was below a minimum amount. I suggested she contact her insurance agent and have them review her policy. She called back very excited. It appeared her policy did extend forgiveness. They would pay for the repairs and she wouldn't be charged with a claim or have to pay a deductible. The accident would not cost her a thing. She was very pleased. Good thing the vehicle owner came to the right place for repairs. We all pay a lot for insurance. Choosing Coachmaster will ensure you get the most for your money. Let this experience work for you. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
So bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die.
Way to go, Sally.
There's no dry levees right now.
Yeah. No dry levees at all right now. A lot of wet levees. Welcome back, everybody. Back to Jefferson State of Mind. We're here with Patrick and Lori Jones. And you can call in if you have a question or you have a comment, 530-605-4567, 530-605-4567. So Lori found something that she's going to share with everybody so we have a clear idea of that this does seem to fit into, if this allegation is true, it does seem to fit into fraud. Go ahead, Lori.
This is just the simple definition of fraud. It's wrongful or criminal deception intended to result in financial or personal gain.
Both. Both were captured.
Well, that kind of sounds.
It's not either or. It's both, yeah. Or in her case.
You know, and if you remember back, you know, for a lot of us that work on campaigns and watch this stuff closely, Eric Jensen was running against Stephanie Bridget. Mm-hmm. She expected to run unopposed, and mm-hmm. she had before, and not a lot of people want to be the DA and in a small county. And Eric got off to a great start, nice-looking young man, well-spoken, articulate, and financed. And so here he comes. He's got radio ads. He's got mailers. He's got TV ads. He's coming on strong. Meanwhile, Stephanie does not have a campaign. She does not have a campaign manager. She has no money in the account. And she clearly got scared because Eric Jensen is beating her. There's no question.
She's already behind.
She's behind. Yeah. And when you get behind in races, you often do not get to time. There's no time to catch up.
Right.
And with only two people in that primary, it's going to be over. It's not going to get to go on to the fall. And so she got desperate. And this is exactly what we saw. This is exactly what the whistleblower, number one, came forward, and number two, both came forward with the exact same conclusions, and we saw these things. And many other people, lots of my friends, unbeknownst to me, because I'm not a big Facebook guy, her staff was constantly.
I mean,
all day, daily, every day, making comments, trying to counter what was being said. And we have all that data, you know. And what's funny is, as this story is picked up, obviously, as this case has been filed now with Shasta County Superior Court, those same people are commenting on Facebook again during business hours.
There you go. Of course they are.
Anyway,
I've
got a couple of questions here that have been asked. Now you're suing the county for $57 million. Okay, the first question I have is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, and the second question is, where does that money go if you receive $57 million?
I'm going to buy a boat.
No, seriously, where does it go? What's your thought process?
Because, we're not, you have to start somewhere. And so the team of attorneys that I've been working with here locally, the amount of damage that was done warrants a large.
Well, that's not the question. The question is, where does the money go if you receive $57 million? Does that go back to the taxpayers because it's taxpayer money? That was the question I was asked.
Well, it's unknown what the judge may allow, what the amount.
Where does any of the money go? I mean, after expenses that you pay.
Right. Obviously, you have attorney fees, so you know your attorneys are going to always do well there. I may receive some money, and then an amount may get returned back to the taxpayers.
So if you win, that money determine, and how did you determine $57 million? That was the other question. But again, if you get money,
58 million sounded like too much. Terry, you've got to start somewhere. We could start at a dollar.
I think I understand why you did that.
We're not motivated by money. We want her to resign, and we're asking her to resign right now, and we could settle
this
thing.
I like the idea of you going after her criminally. I mean, I think that's the main thing, because she can resign, and we still get screwed, because we've got to pay this lady, who apparently, if she's convicted of crime, of fraud, like Lori said, if she's convicted of fraud, and there's a settlement, that's taxpayer money, number one. And number two, I understand why you came up with a figure.
Well,
you want a big figure.
You can't go back in time. So damage was done. So fraud occurred, misuse of public funds. It occurred. And so
if
you want it all to go away, then go with the direction that county council is going right now to try to cover it up. You can't cover it up. At some time,
you have
to bite the bullet and say there's wrongdoing. And yeah, it's costly. I remember back when I was on city council and Tim Pappas came forward and warned the council for changing their policy with regards to who could be out in front of the library. And you remember that case, Prigmore versus City of Reading.
I do.
And Tim Pappas ultimately won. It was a First Amendment issue. And what did it cost the taxpayers? $285,000. And the city complained, look what you cost us. It's like, no, you did this. Your policies, bad policies, unconstitutional policies cost the taxpayers money, and now you got to pay. You got to cough it up. If we don't stop fraud, it's going to continue.
Right.
And
I think everybody agrees with that. I don't think anybody disagrees with that.
The penalty, I don't know, the amount of damage. What is dismissing 800 cases?
Question I got asked is, first of all, it's like any court case is really because you've received individual harm. So actually, individual harm is the only way that you can, it's Roe versus Wade, not Roe versus the United States or United States versus Roe, or there always has to be a specificity. So as a plaintiff in a case, that means a specificity. Are we seeking damages and wanting to get this woman not only out of office, but if she did wrongdoing, prosecuted wrongdoing, or are we looking for gain financially? I guess that's the question. That's another question that we had.
Yeah, well, it's all unknown, right? I mean, the settlement, I'm looking for a settlement, but the first part of that settlement is she has to step down. And then this can go away much cheaper and be very good for the taxpayers, but she would have to step down. Now, is the board going to discuss this in closed session on Tuesday? Most likely there is a spot there. It doesn't say the specific case, but I'm assuming it's mine. And they could potentially take a look at a settlement. I'm pretty certain that they won't. They were probably going to want to wait until we get through this first month or two and see how this thing starts, what kind of direction it takes. And I suspect, because I know the board, I know county council, I have a pretty good idea. And they do not like to concede to wrongdoing at any time, ever. It's a bad thing with government, but you never see them say, we made a mistake. You just don't see them, and they don't apologize for making mistakes. This was a multitude of mistakes made by county councils past, present. It's mistakes made by the board, past board members, present board members, mistakes made by the DA. And I feel very, very strongly about the first whistleblower. That person put a lot out there, and
is she one of the plaintiffs on the case? On your court case?
No.
You're the only plaintiff?
Correct.
Okay,
but she did, that individual did the right thing by telling the truth, and telling what happened. And they expected justice, and justice didn't get done. In fact, they tried to cover it up. I was lucky, in that.
They meaning?
The county.
Go ahead.
The county has tried to cover it up.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm lucky because Dave mentioned it to me. If our CEO, Dave Rickard, had not mentioned it to me, I would have never known, nobody would have known about this investigation or about this whistleblower. It would have been completely covered up. This is the only internal investigation that's come to light to this day. It's the only one.
So how many are there that we don't know about?
Unknown, you know. So are you saying there are none? Well, that's probably not the case, right?
And then how much money did each of those that were settled cost the county that the board the board ended up pencil whipping and not knowing and not getting the full story on all those things?
Well, all those things could be very possible, right? We have no idea what
occurred. Okay, so we need to have a forensic audit.
Oh,
I've been saying this over and over and over and over. Forensic audit the hell out of the county.
Well, good grief. When? It isn't going to happen.
Look, I know. That's the frustrating part.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
Right. There's lots of things that should go on, but they're not going to highlight liability on a major scale. This is one chunk of it. Do you think that there aren't any issues with Health and Human Services? Look at what's happening all over the country.
That's
right?
Why I said the county.
Yeah, you know?
That's why I said the county. It was a broad umbrella.
Right.
So we have to get our house in order before we can do anything else. So
yeah, there was another that caveats into this other question, and that is the fact that, okay, so who's getting justice out of all this? You know, I mean,
the county.
Well, no, if. You know, let's
by
say,
cover up and not spending the money that they need to spend, the county and whoever they are, whether it's the BOS or the Health and Human Services or the DA's office,
they're
all getting the justice. Well, nobody else is,
right? And the thing is, too, is that as far as the county goes and the money, what they're looking at here is that, you know, they may have hired outside counsel, but she could hire outside counsel for $1,500, for example, an hour,
mm-hmm.
and they could hire counsel outside for $700 an hour, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the way they're looking at it. Is that right? No, that's not right. I think, you know, but again, how do we get justice on this? We ask her to resign. Some people get some money, and the county's still stuck with whoever gets appointed by a board of supervisors who apparently don't want to really touch this with a plastic wand.
Right.
So I'm trying to figure out what the...
Well, there would be some justice in her resigning. So that would show the public that there's some wrongdoing. Just like Eric Magrini resigned, that was a good thing. He was a bad actor, and the county's better that he's not there. When Matt Pontus resigned, that was an awesome thing. When Leonard Modi got recalled and he's out of government, that's an awesome thing. So there is some justice when somebody resigns. I'd like to, you know, legally hold him accountable. That would be nice for a change. We'll see. But at least if they resigned, that would be a good start. And then the board would have a great opportunity to pick somebody that would really serve the residents of Shasta County, because we need a good DA. And we don't need a DA that uses her staff to run her campaign and then lies about it to the public and tries to make excuses as to why things aren't getting done.
And you're right about all that. If you're the whistleblower, okay, you have specificity and harm if you were made to do these things for the DA. If you were made to do them, there's a specificity and harm. So whoever that whistleblower is virtually could go ahead and even sue under Title 42, 1983, because she has been, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, Wendy's nodding his head.
Yep.
Okay, and you guys can look that up. It's a paragraph. Title 42, 1983.
Yep.
It specifically says that under the color of law, someone who's your boss, if they're elected officials or appointed officials, can't make you do something that violates your constitutionally protected rights or the law.
Of
law. What's that?
Outside of the scope of their work.
Right.
That's correct.
Exactly. And that's apparently, you're right, Lori, and that's what happened here. Apparently, the whistleblower was made to do something. Otherwise, if she wouldn't have blown the whistle if she wanted to do it. So she must have felt, hypothetically, but importantly, She must have felt that she had an issue mm-hmm. with being forced to do something she didn't want to do because she didn't feel like it was in the scope of her work or the law.
Go ahead. Well, what Bridget said was that if we don't win this election, and she's behind, everybody was hysterical within the office because they knew. They knew that they were behind, and she said, if we don't win this election, we're all going to lose our jobs. And the only truth to that was Stephanie was going to lose her job,
right.
Not anybody else. But that's what she said. That's what the whistleblower said, and the whistleblower was found to be credible. And the whistleblower saw many of the same. This individual is saying the same things that many of us saw on a daily basis. And you know, so you know, again, I'm attempting to do this. My name should not have come up, right? As a whistleblower, you're supposed to have protections, you know, and, you know, they should have done a thorough investigation. They could have got to the truth of it. The county should be dealing with this and holding her to task. My name should have never come up. But because the county was stalling, did not perform the investigation that is required by law, and was trying to run out the statute of limitations, I had no choice but to file a complaint. And so my whistleblower protection has been lost, and possible retaliation you know, now could occur.
Okay, so the specificity is you're suing on behalf of the fact that you were a whistleblower, you were protected under law to not have your name brought up or any of this stuff. They did do that. When did they do that before you filed suit? When did they do that to you?
When did they do what to me?
When did they call you out as a whistleblower before you filed suit?
No, so my name was kept quiet. I mean, it leaked over, I'm certain, with the county councils that we had, leaked to the DA right off the bat as soon as I filed the first complaint. So, you know, they broke that probably very quickly, mid-year 2023, most likely. Once I had to file the complaint, the formal complaint with the county, because the statute was running out because they were stalling, then at that time, absolutely, you know, now I have no protection at all. And because I had to file a complaint, that complaint becomes public.
Okay.
And and obviously we file suit.
So you were pushed into that.
I had no choice.
Right.
It was going to the time limit. The time was going to run out.
Okay.
I gave the county as much time as I possibly could to do the right thing.
2 years to do the right thing.
Yeah.
Good grief.
And they denied my complaint, even though that it was true, and there are board members that know that what I'm saying is absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll take a polygraph on any of this, and I challenge anyone at the DA's office or anyone to take a polygraph on any of these allegations that I've made and the things that we've seen.
Maybe Stephanie Bridget should step up and do a polygraph.
I think so.
Can attorneys pass those?
Well, you know, every time I've asked someone to do a polygraph, when the day came to do the polygraph,
they quit. Yeah.
Nobody was there.
Yeah, they wouldn't do it.
And I'm the only one that did one. We televised it.
Yep,
in fact, Channel 7 was there, and I passed.
Yep.
And I've never taken one before that. Didn't know what to expect. And they're not admissible in court, but, you know, law enforcement here uses them routinely to weed out a possible suspect.
Yes.
If you remember the husband in the Papini case, they quickly gave him a polygraph and he passed easily, and he was not a person of interest right off the bat. And that really helps them because they can move on to the actual person, so it's a valuable tool,
mm-hmm.
even though it's not admissible. But try to get anybody to do it, and they typically don't because they're not going to pass, not telling the truth.
Was there any reason initially why the county didn't do this to begin with, and why this has even gotten to this point? At the very start of this, when this is all found out, was it the same people who were on the Board of Supervisors now when this was all found out at the beginning, or was it other people?
So we had a very corrupt county council when I got on the board in 2021. We had a convicted felon for CEO. We had Leonard Modi that was controlling so many different things. And once that onion started getting peeled back and Modi got recalled, I was hand delivered, Matt Pontus's, criminal convictions. And then he shortly resigned. And so we started peeling this thing back and these bad actors started to flee. And about shortly thereafter, more bad actors within the county council's office. Clearly, a lot of bad actors there. Ruben Cruz abruptly resigns. Jim Ross then takes over another county council. He resigns. And then when I made my whistleblower complaint, it was with Matt McCumber, and then he quickly resigned. And then we had an interim.
So they're all seeing the writing on the wall, are they?
So they're all resigning.
Swing in the ship, baby.
Yeah. And so we had most of our department heads leave at about this time, and they all resigned. And you heard some people in the community saying, you're losing all your best employees. No, we're getting rid of the worst.
Got to sift them out.
And unfortunately, a lot of them have just gone on to other counties, various other places.
Doing the same thing down
there.
Whether
it was Trinity County or over in Rockland or wherever, they just move over. And, it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
That you can't hold these people accountable when, for example, when Ruben Cruz withheld an entire court case on us, on the board, mm-hmm. we were unaware that we were actually in court on an issue for 2 years, totally unaware. He had no authority. The board had never given him any authority to do anything on that case. We were unaware of that case. And what did it cost the taxpayers? Over $2 million to settle that case because we were lied to.
And again, the board had to sign off on that dollar, those dollars being spent, and you knew, had no knowledge
of
the
case.
Yeah,
that's kind of
right.
That was my question earlier.
Well, the board,
how does that work?
Well, the board did the right thing on the Crop Hauler case because he was wronged.
Yes.
And county council wronged him. Eric McGreeny wronged him. We were held in the dark. And so we settled that case. The board did the right job on a 3-2 vote.
Yes.
Supervisor Garmin and Supervisor Rickert did not do the right thing, but the rest of the board did.
That was
and
expected.
And so we bit the bullet. Mm-hmm. We apologized to him, mm-hmm. and we paid him $2 million because of the damage that we caused to him.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a very similar thing where the DA has done wrong, and she needs to be held accountable. The difference this time is I'm not there as a board member.
Mm-hmm.
We've got new board members that are brand new, and we have three brand new board members that have never been in politics before.
Right.
And so you have a different board, mm-hmm. and they're taking a different direction. And I believe they're attempting to cover up the wrongdoing, and it shouldn't be covered up.
Are you saying that the Board of Supervisors is covering up the wrongdoing, or?
Well, they make the calls. So everything has to go through the board. So if this case moves forward, they could stop this case right now and concede to it, or they could proceed forward, which is what they've done. They've already voted to hire outside counsel to represent Stephanie Bridget. They've already voted to do that. So they're already making those decisions.
Can they go back and change their opinion on that vote?
They can. Yep, if they so chose to. And they could come out of closed session and say something, that we have changed our position. So that's up to the board. That's up to this board. As we go through in this will be a jury trial. And so I really look forward to subpoenaing all the people and all the testimony, because you're going to see thousands of emails that were never looked at. You're going to see a lot of information showing just how much these county employees were working on county time.
Hmm. Yeah, it seems as if the whole thing is that if you're trying to save money, if that's the board's position, they want to save money by doing this so Stephanie doesn't go after them in case you win. Okay. If they want to save money, then what is the price of liberty? I mean, what's the cost of that?
Eternal vigilance.
Right. And also it should be, I mean, everything you've talked about and what Lori had said and read is this sounds criminal. This sounds criminal, not just you get to retire and you lose a year's salary. It sounds criminal. If it's all true and if it's all comes to fruition, it sounds criminal. Patrick, you got a minute. Go ahead, buddy.
So, again, I encourage people to take a look at the first whistleblower report, even as weak as it is. Stephanie Bridget admits under oath that she, in fact, did campaign on county time, and the investigator, on his conclusion, concluded that by a preponderance of the evidence that Stephanie Bridget and her subordinates engaged in election campaigning during county time, and that was sustained. And they tried to downplay it and said it was de minimis, but they've already made the statement. You've already admitted to the fraud. The fraud has been sustained, and now she has to be held accountable.
There you go.
There you go. Patrick Jones, thank you so much. Lori Jones, thank you, darling.
Thank you.
Wynn Carpenter
thank
and
you.
Perry Raposa.
Signing out.
Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get her done.
Amen.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.